It was over 24 hours into it, and I was just on another planet in another dimension. And I said, this isn't the Hudson Valley Traverse. Like, this is going to be called the Hudson Highlands Hell No Hellhole Hundo.
Nice.
That's what it went down. So when I finished it, I sent it over to the fastest known time website and said, you can submit routes for other people to do. And me and my friends are like, there's no way they're gonna approve this name and publish it. And then sure enough, they put it online. And since then, there's been one person who's completed it, and it was very, very cool to see that happen. It took me 40 hours to finish.
Wow.
And then this local guy, he's up in Connecticut.
The bushwhacks were some of the worst days I've ever had in the mountains, or life, really.
And I tell people all the time, never underestimate the Catskills. You can't underestimate them.
Why the Catskills is such a great place for trout.
It is really the development of New York State. Catskills were responsible.
Now you're listening to Inside the Line, the Catskills.
Crazy time of year, don't you think, Kim?
Yeah, it's always a crazy time with spring rolling around.
Yeah, you got, maybe nothing down below, but weird ice rails up top from people doing snowshoes, and there's a lot of talk, of different things happening. And then also at this time of year, is the snow melt is a big problem.
Yeah, the snow is sticking around. I'm hoping it melts pretty soon, but it looks like it's sticking around.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of rescues has happened. Like for instance, there's this one that I saw that happened up in the Adirondacks. They actually had a bunch of videos. The Rangers took videos of it. So I'll go over it quickly, and then I'll go over like the video. So on April 1st, this is from the DEC. So this is well written. I'm just like, it sounds like they wrote a book about this. But
I saw this online. I saw this on Instagram.
isn't this so crazy?
Yeah, this is wild. Yeah.
Yeah. Four hikers, longtime college friends, went up Street and Nye. It says trailless, but they're not really trailless. They have herd paths. On the return trip to the lodge, they arrived at Indian Brook around 7:45 p.m., which is pretty late. So, the once crossable brook was swollen to a point of being very dangerous. I watched the videos, and I was just like, "Holy crap, that thing's flowing!" So after time, they walked around, they checked out to see what they could find. They couldn't really find any crossings. So what did they do? They called the Rangers. And a lot of people say don't call them unless you truly need them. And this was a very good call by them, because that could have been someone dying going into the river and then flowing down and getting caught between a rock. It's not good. So nighttime temperatures have fallen, and to be really cold. So the Rangers were dispatched around 8:30. So got right up there, right at the lodge, right at the Indian Brook. Six Rangers did an ACA, Swift Water members too, and four support members carried them from one side to the other, as from I saw, in like kind of like a blown up canoe. It was actually really, really cool to watch, and it was just crazy to see the stuff that they got stuck, like what could happen in a matter of 12 hours to that river, all that snow melting in a matter of all these different creeks flowing into one can make it into one massive river. So it was crazy. They called the inflatable a ducky, which is like a swift water kayak. And by 12:30, the four subjects were located safely across the brook, and at 1:45 they were back at the lodge. So crazy, right?
It's wild. Yeah, I remember I think this was posted on the Instagram post from New York, and they were talking about how they had rangers upstream, downstream as well, or search and rescue personnel in case, it didn't go well.
Yeah.
But it was wild. The water was definitely moving across the brook.
Yeah. And the cool thing is they had like a line made from one tree to another, and they hooked the kayak into it. Well, they strung the kayak through the line. So basically the person had to stay on that line. You know, it's not like they pushed him over and were like, good luck.
Right.
So that would have been fun. But yeah, it's that time of year. I don't, you know, the Catskills don't really get as insane as the Adirondacks because the Adirondacks always get so much more snow. But we have those times of where someone, you know, up in the streams, you know, you see it down in the Gunks and other places with the big, large rocks. If you have one slip or the pushes you down, your foot can get lodged right in between those rocks and you could drown.
Yeah. And
it's a big fear of mine is the water and just imagine that that's gotta be a horrible death is drowning.
Yeah. It's not a good day. It's a bad day.
Yeah. So kudos to the Rangers. Once again, they freaking did awesome up in the Adirondacks. They're always doing stuff in the Adirondacks and they're always killing it. Especially this year. It's been a crazy year for search and rescue in the Adirondacks.
Yeah. I appreciate that they've started sharing this stuff online, especially on social media, because I feel like it helps bring awareness to what's actually going on out there. And, you know, you can definitely learn a lot from watching these things and reading the reports that they're putting online.
Exactly. And that's great. That's a great point. You know, just imagine if they were just like, oh, these subjects were rescued across the brook and that's it. You know, like the old days. And this is a little bring like people to realize that creek, that river was flowing. Right. And it's not something I would look at and be like, I think I'll take my chances. It's something that I'm just like, hell no, this sucks. So kudos to the Rangers and kudos to the people for calling, because once again, that could have been one person gone from that trying to cross or trying to do something to cross. So if you need help and the Rangers, you know, the Rangers will help you. They are number one paid to help you. And number two, they will, because that's their dedication. They are dedicated to helping the public with whatever instance they need.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, crazy stuff. There's a bunch in the Catskills we'll talk about that happened over whatever the weekend. You know, Kim and I were supposed to, we're recording Monday right now. It's the 10th. We were supposed to record last Wednesday, but we got our search and rescue team got called out. So I had to cancel that. Don't really know if I can talk about that, Kim, but I wish I could talk about it. But you know, Rangers search and rescue, any teams that were involved in that, awesome job. You guys did fantastic. So welcome to Inside the Line, the Catskill Mountain podcast. How you doing, Kim?
Awesome. I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So Kim is here to chat about her upcoming attempt of breaking the female time for the fastest known time for the long path, correct?
Yeah, that's right. There currently is not any recorded time for any female. So it's more so establishing it for the ladies.
Yeah. I wish I could have done this last month in Women's Appreciation Month. That would have been
that's all right.
Smarter, but we're still celebrating that. So
awesome.
But thanks for joining me on the show. We're going to have a good chat and I'll have to get some more information about the long path. I guarantee you have some stats that I would love to hear about.
Awesome.
Awesome. So thank you to the monthly supporters, Darren White, Vicky Ferrer, John Comiskey, Jim C., Michael Bongner, David Mead, Matt Smith, and Sharon Klein. Thank you for supporting the show. Big thank you to Outdoor Chronicles Photography for being the sponsor of the show. Molly from Outdoor Chronicles Photography specializes in adventure elopement and adventure couple photography in the Catskills, Adirondacks, and White Mountains. Also, don't forget your pets. They are just important. She's also an officiant for getting married and a licensed guide. So check out her Instagram and Facebook page and don't hesitate to get a hold of her on all platforms. Also, have you ever wanted to learn about hiking or backpacking or even just brush up some of the skills that you have in the backcountry? Take a look at my friend's business called the Trail Bomb Project down in New Jersey, a hiking and backpacking school. Now, Scott and Joe from New Jersey Search and Rescue have fantastic skills for you to learn and for you to brush up on your old skills of hiking and backpacking. Check them out on their website and on social media platforms. Ask them any questions, get with them because they do know everything about hiking. I learned a lot from them at my search and rescue participations with them. Also, want some new gear? Check out Camp Catskill in Tannersville down in the Catskills. Camp Catskill has all your hiking needs, from spikes to snowshoes to moisture wicking shirts and memorabilia. They have everything. The snowshoes are probably going away now and spikes for a little bit, but they have pretty much everything you need for your hiking. So check their online webpage, and you can order online. And also, if you're ready to hit the trails, make sure you take Scenic Route Guiding. Our guides are here to help with your goals, big or small. Check out the Scenic Route Guiding and Gear Rentals on Instagram and Facebook for more information. Now, we used to do this with Scenic Route Guiding. So I'm going to say this because Sarah and I used to have this funny thing with mountain lions. If you mention the podcast, you can get 10% off and you use the code mountain lion. I used to have, back when I first started this, she used to be my only sponsor. And I had a little snippet that I pre-recorded, and it was fantastic. It was hilarious. Maybe I'll do that again. What do you think about mountain lions in the Catskills and or Northeast?
What do I think of them? Are you asking if they exist or not?
Yes.
That's a good question. I mean, I live in Sussex County, North Jersey, and there's chatter that they're out here. I don't doubt it. I personally have never seen one. I've seen bobcats and for sure black bears, but I personally have not seen mountain lions.
It's tough.
It's possible.
Yeah. I love hearing the chatter about mountain lions and them seeing a bobcat track or a dog track and be like, is this a mountain lion track?
Yeah.
always see that. And I'm just like, no, it's not. It's a dog track that's melted. So it's always like that. And I had a previous episode of a guy who was doing like a research on mountain lions in the Northeast. So it was definitely pretty cool. And I like his honesty because he was just like, he said, do they exist? I would think so. Yes. Are there a breeding population that everybody who sees one walking on the streets, you know, will record it and be like, this is a mountain lion? No.
There you have it.
It's so difficult with that situation because, you know, like you said, there's very, 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 very little evidence of that kind of stuff going on up here. And you see bear tracks everywhere, which is awesome. It's crazy. That's a good thing. So are you having anything to drink tonight, Kim?
I've just got some decaf tea going on right here.
People have the decaf tea. It's good. Good. Yeah. I have water basically because it's a Monday night. So, and I'm doing some hiking tomorrow. So
right on.
Nice. Going to be bushwhacking up Mount Tremper, so it's going to be
all
fun.
All right.
Yeah. You been on any previous hikes lately?
Any hikes? I did a lot of hiking on Friday. Sasquad, my race company, we had an event at Bear Mountain on Saturday. So Friday I was out marking the course with ribbons and arrows. So that took most of the day. It's about 7 hours of hiking around Harriman State.
How many miles?
Was probably, I finished with 14, but it's slow going when you're putting ribbons on trees and arrows and clearing the brush, getting ready for the race. So
yeah, that is, I remember, I think our search and rescue team is involved in that.
Yes.
How long is that? It's like 30, 50 and 70 miles or something.
So this race on Saturday, we had a half marathon, which was really about 14 miles. And then we had a 50K, which was around 30. And we invited New Jersey Search and Rescue to come out. So we had a really great showing from them. They had two shifts of four or five members throughout the day. And, you know, thankfully, they did not have to go out. So everyone was safe and accounted for. But it was really great. I think I personally, it was a great just peace of mind knowing they were there. I think the runners enjoyed chatting with them as well. And I think search and rescue is kind of fascinated by the whole race scene as well. So
of course I am fascinated by that stuff. I can't, it's absolutely insane. When you see somebody coming down, you're going up hustling, bustling, they're hopping from rock to rock and they're just like, hey, and then they're gone.
Yeah.
It's so odd. It's like the Flash almost. Yeah. Well, cool. Excellent. Yeah. I was on a previous hike, but that was a search and rescue. So that was a long, long days. But I'll be on a hike tomorrow. So I can't wait, which is like Tuesday, the 11th. Once again. Yeah. Hopefully I'll get back out there. I haven't been back out in a while because I've just been so busy with life, work, going to hockey games, finishing up the hockey season. So,
okay.
That's it. So news, got a bunch of, I think this is our just one Catskill news. This was, I'm trying to say, geez, 7:45. So This was, I think, like a week or two ago. There was an injured hiker rescued on Overlook Mountain Trail by the Woodstock Fire Department. The Woodstock Fire Department said they responded to the trail at exactly 7:45 a.m. and rescued an 83-year-old man who had fallen and dislocated his hip. The man said he was resting comfortably on the ground about 1/5 of a mile under the trail when they arrived. Well, according to the department, he was placed on a utility task vehicle and taken down to the trail entrance before being transported to Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston for further treatment. Good for him for getting help right away. 7:45, that's very early. Hopefully he wasn't there all night. And that's 83-year-old guy. That's kicking it at 83-year-old.
Wow. Still moving and grooving. It's awesome.
Exactly. So also, volunteer opportunities are galore right now. Everybody's signing up for summer stuff. So Kim's going to talk about volunteering tonight because she's a big volunteer and she knows the importance of volunteering. So check out 3500 Club, Catskill Mountain Club, New York, New Jersey Trail Conference. I'm trying to think else, Catskills Visitor Center, check out volunteering. You know, I always say, you know, you're hiking so many times in the woods, you put 8 hours a day in the woods for, you know, once a week. How about you put 4 hours one time, maybe 2-3 times a year? Come on. It's not that difficult.
The heart and soul of, I mean, volunteers, these trails don't exist without them. So especially New York, New Jersey Trail Conference, it's unbelievable the amount of work that they do and manpower. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's definitely awesome what we all do, what all the volunteers do. So thank you for volunteering and start to volunteer because we definitely need it. It'll help. Trust me, you're hiking this for free, so you might as well volunteer. Come on. Mm-hmm. All right. So Kim, how about we do a quick little thing of Catskill Mountain history?
Okay.
All right. So I got this from Bob Studien's book, Heart of the Catskills. So very cool stuff about bark peeling and how dangerous and difficult it was. So bark peeling was extremely difficult and dangerous work. At any moment, a branch or tree could fall on and crush a man. A misstep on a slippery tree trunk could result in a broken bone, or a sharp-edged tool could slip and cut a deep wound. Working, as did Jim Dutcher, from sunrise to sunset, approximately 15 to 16 hours in the spring, the bark peeler was paid $150 a day or $275 a day, but some bark peelers made even less. Although anything over one day was considered good pay at the time, and the peeler's credit at a local tavern or credit store was assured, it was expected that he would peel and pile about 2 cords of bark in a day. Was no easy task for anyone. The clothing of bark peelers became quickly impregnated with slicky slime. As a result, leaves and twigs stuck to their shirts, and their trousers became so heavy and rigid with sap, it is said that they could be stood against walls at night. Insects, too, were the bane of those workers. For in the spring, when the bark was peeled, black flies, newly hatched, were thick and bit ferociously and exposed a batch of skin. Damn, black flies. They kill you in warm and cloudy weather, states Mike Todd, whose grandfather had cut bark. You douse your face with kerosene and tar. Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. At night, smudge fires were lit in order to allow the workers to sleep. But this practice did not always work, and it filled bark shanties with suffocating smoke. At times, the bugs were so bad that the men slept with their heads stuck in feed sacks. Wow, we have it good these days.
Wow.
As a result of these conditions, bark peelers were tired all the time and often displayed a haggard and exhausted look. One bark peeler remembers in his day in the woods, he writes, "At no other work in the forest did we suffer tortures of so many kinds. We painted for breath in the dead, hot air in the closed glades in which the hemlocks chose to grow. Swarms of mosquitoes found their way to every part of our thinly clad bodies. Black flies chewed the flesh and raised great welts." In early July, these torments finally ceased when the bark peeling season came to the end. And throughout the Southern Catskills on July 4th, both the birth of the nation and the end of the season were celebrated with enthusiasm. Out of the depths of the forest came the exhausted but now affluent bark peelers, who once reached civilization, drank large quantities of alcohol, fought each other, and generally had riots and good time. Everyone, however, did not approve of such practices, nor even these of hardworking men. Horace Greeley, for example, the noted social reformer, presidential candidate, and publisher of the New York Weekly Tribune, bemoaned the situation, calling bark peelers shiftless He asserted that poverty, lack of education, irregulation, and their love of liquor were the hallmarks. In a contemporary restatement of Greeley's assessment of bark peelers, Les Showers Wilts, a descendant of pioneers in the Northern Catskill, writes, "Every spring, a horde of bark peelers came into the mountains, staying as long as the bark could be peeled from the trees." She continues, "By midsummer, their task done, most began to drift away. With few exceptions, they contributed little to the advancement of civilization." Yet, as if to balance this one-sided view, economic historian Richard Wiles points out that bark peeling was casual, seasonal employment with moving on and of everyday occurrence. Wow, we have it good.
That's rough. That's a rough occupation.
Yeah. Reading that just like blows my mind. So we kind of can avoid the black flies when, if we want to. We're just like, yeah, we won't go out for a month or two.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, sticking your head in a bag of feed sounds pretty desperate, right?
To sleep. Yeah. Like, oh, I'll just stick my head in here. We had, oh my God, that's just like, I'm trying to go back up. I want to see what else. Clothing was like so thick and stuff. Just imagine like having to haul that stuff, haul the bark and stuff, like stepping like you're on concrete.
Putting kerosene and tar on you as well. That's pretty extreme.
Exactly. And I used to have a kerosene heater in the house back when I was a kid, like in our whole house. And I was like, that smell was disgusting.
Oh,
it's horrible. Crazy stuff. Bark peelers, thank you for what you did in the Catskills. All right, let's get on to the guest of the night.
Let's go.
So Kim Ovinsky and her fastest known time attempt of the long path. Now, this is for a woman's fastest known time attempt. Who did Ken set the fastest known time for the long path?
Ken did establish it, and then it's since been broken, I think it was a year or two ago, by a guy named Jeff Adams up near, he's from the Albany area, and he set the new FKT, which is around 7.5 days.
Oh, wow. Excellent. So Kim's here to talk about her attempt and what she's going to go through with the long path and what kind of like training and stuff like that, her background. And then we're going to, hopefully this will put some light on Kim and we'll be cheering her on when she attempts it. So Kim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's awesome to be here. I've been looking forward to this the last couple of weeks.
Same. I'm sorry we had to delay this for a little bit, but I'm glad we're here.
All good. No worries.
All good. So, Kim, why don't you just give us a little background about yourself? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Name's Kim Levinsky. I live in North Jersey, Sussex County, and I've been running since 2014 or so. I started as a road runner and then got into the trails. And kind of just wanted to keep going longer and longer. So I started out like literally just getting off the couch and trying to run around the block. And then eventually did a half marathon, jumped into ultra running, which led me to the trails. So once I checked out the trails for the first time, I never went back. I just fell in love with the whole environment. I fell in love with the community, the people. And haven't looked back. So right now I'm a full-time race director. My company is Sasquatch Trail Running. We put on events in New Jersey and New York. It started up in 2018. We call them trail parties instead of trail races. So we like to have a lot of fun, make it a welcoming space for newbies, people trying out trails. And we've been working hard to make it very hiker friendly as well. So we're generous with cutoff times because we want folks to come out and not be worried about being able to finish in time. So we always say we welcome all people's paces and ages to our events at Sasquad.
I like the trail parties thing. That's awesome.
That's right. Every run is a trail party.
Nice. It's like your enthusiasm right now is fantastic. I love it. It's so nice. So like when you started like running, and then did you jump right into trail running, or did you hike a little bit and then be like, okay, I could probably run this?
I think it was more so started running. So I started out, you know, my background, I played sports growing up. So I always was active playing team sports. And then once that all kind of wrapped up after college, I got into the world of running. And then hiking, I did a little bit, I guess in college was probably my first exposure to hiking. The school that I went to one of their graduation requirements was actually, it was like a week long backpacking trip in the Adirondacks.
Nice. So
that was kind of a throw you in the deep end of the pool type of a thing and hope you can swim. I mean, right. I really didn't have much exposure to trails before that. I mean, I think my grandma would take us hiking when we were young, but nothing really beyond that. So college, that backpacking trip, I went in kind of kicking and screaming. I didn't want to do it. And then I loved the whole experience, was really transformative. So that was kind of, I guess, maybe the intro to it. But yeah, I mean, it started out as a runner, and I think I've done a lot more hiking the last couple of years, just with going longer. Even if you are an elite runner, you're still hiking a lot in these really long multi-day races. So I'm more of a mid back of the packer. So there's a lot of hiking going on, which is fun.
Yeah. But that's, you guys sprinting on these trails isn't hiking, man. It's a whole different thing than what I do. Hiking to me is like walking on the trail, running on the trail. That's crazy. We got to name it something different, like run hiking or something like that. You guys are crazy on the trails.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because just to give you my perspective as a trail runner, I think that hikers are the tough ones. I mean, you're out there, as when you're hiking, you're out there a long time, especially as a race director. When I see folks coming in to hike, like we had an event in September where we had a group of people come. They said they were going to hike the whole marathon, and they did that, and it took them, and it was almost 10 hours to hike. Wow. And other runners were commenting, like, you guys are the tough ones hiking this whole thing rather than hiking, running. So I don't know. It's kind of, you know, two sides of the same coin, maybe.
That's true. Okay. That's a good way to say it. So we talked about Women's History Month. It was recently Women's History Month. Do you have anything to say to the ladies of the show? I just looked it up. 22% of the people are female, so that listen to the show. Any like advice or shout outs you want to give
to the ladies? Well, 22%, that's pretty consistent with actually ultra running in the nation. That's around the average of how many women come out to ultra running events.
Oh, cool.
So I would say keep coming out. Don't be, I think there's a lot of hesitation, at least the ladies that I interact with. A common thing I hear is there's hesitation to go out alone because maybe they don't have folks to go out and hike or run with. And my response is always give it a try, because those fears might not be confirmed when you're out there. And more often than not, once ladies get out on the trails to run or hike, they really fall in love with it. And I always just encourage people, you will find a community. I think in the hiking space and the trail running space, there's some really strong and authentic communities. So just encourage you to dip your toes in the water. And, you know, if you're feeling like you want to check it out, go for it, because I think you're really going to enjoy it.
So being a woman, and that you said, you know, do you do solo hiking in the woods?
I do. Yeah, I do a lot of solo.
Okay. That's a big topic to talk about, is, you know, a woman being alone in the woods. You know, there's always these sayings of threats and stuff. You should never hike alone. Is there any like advice you want to give of just like, I've got a bunch of female friends that hike alone, and they said they've never felt any threat in the woods. And most of the threats I've heard from are, which is weird, is the Appalachian Trail. I mean, it's very odd. So do you have anything to any thoughts about that? Like, just do it and kick the shit out of someone who wants to run away from them.
Oh man. Well, I mean, I would agree with that. I certainly feel much safer and more confident out in the woods by myself compared to if I were to go out my front door and run by myself at night. I think I would feel a little bit more cautious about that. You know, I've done a fair amount of solo runs and hikes in national parks, and that safety is really never, I've never felt unsafe in those situations. But that being said, I think there are definitely precautions that you can and should take. And a lot of them would be consistent whether you're male or female, but, you know, looking where you're going ahead of time, making a plan, letting somebody know where you're going, and then also estimated times of when you're starting and finishing, Personally, I go out with a Garmin inReach. I always have that in my pack, whether I'm on a local trail or going out, you know, across the country somewhere. Extra battery pack, something like that. I personally carry pepper spray as well, but that's honestly more for off-leash dogs than human beings.
Yes.
Because
oh my God, yes.
The amount of times a dog is running at me, I mean, I've never had to expel the pepper spray, but when a dog is running at you and that owner is shouting, "Oh, it's friendly, don't worry," it's just out of control. But
yeah, those eyes and those teeth say a whole nother story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So being female, I know, has a lot of different challenges. My wife, of course, you know, she always talks about like her hair being sweaty because it's so long. And of course, other things of, you know, doing your business on the trail. It's much easier for a man to do it. With this fastest known time attempt, there's going to be, of course, different challenges with a female. Like, what are some of those challenges besides, you know, like your hair and stuff like that, that, you know, you have on the trails being a female?
That's a funny, interesting question. I've never really thought about my hair.
She says because it touches her back and stuff, it gets sweaty. So okay. That's it's all heavier and stuff like that. And she hates it. She can't put it up because then she wears a hat or something like that. And it just, it absorbs everything. And she just says it's a pain in the ass. She's like, "You got it lucky because you have no hair." I'm just like, cut it off then. Shave it off.
Yeah. I mean, I pull mine back and usually in a bun. So it is off my neck. I understand what she's saying. If that's on your neck, it's probably not fun, but I usually throw a hat on and, sometimes even use a buff like to keep your neck cold, you know, dip it in the stream. But challenges of female. I mean, it's funny you said that with, you know, using the restroom. I remember when I was doing the Tahoe 200 race in June, that was something I kept saying was like, these guys have it so easy. They just need to step one off, you know, one step off the trail and they don't need to do any, you know, they don't have to crouch down and all that. But other than that, I mean, sure, you know, menstrual cycle, that's a major inconvenience if you're out on the trail when that happens. But good thing about most women is we're pretty badass, so it's not really that big deal, you know. So I think as a species we're pretty resilient when it comes to those things. But yeah, I don't know, I haven't really thought of any gender specific challenges for this adventure, but if they come up, I'm sure. Yeah, you know, my crew is pretty much all female, so we'll tackle it if there are any problems that arise.
Nice, nice. Do you do a blog? Are you going to do like a blog about this, about your whole time?
Yeah, I've been keeping a video blog, I guess you call it a vlog, on YouTube. So I've been trying to update that every couple of weeks, just sharing the back end of the planning that's going on and trying to be transparent with it because I think it's helpful to other people who maybe are planning. Whether they're FKTs or multi-day adventures, it's fun to share and swap intel. So that's fun about, you know, trail and hiking community. It seems to be, for the most part, very open between each other and sharing of information. So, yeah, I've been sharing that on the back end.
Sweet. I'll tag that in the show notes and hopefully you'll get some people that'll want to check it out. Cause I checked it out. It's actually really neat stuff. I like I said, you're very enthusiastic. You're very engaging, so it's very cool to watch.
Very cool. Well, I'm happy to chat about it. I love this stuff. I'm passionate about it, and it's my career, so I'd love it. So,
yeah, you're the trail party director for the Sasquad Running. How'd you come up with that name, by the way?
Sasquad Trail Running. I know everybody asks that, and it's a fun story. I love to tell. My sister claims that she thought of the name. No, it's up for debate. I'm pretty sure I was the one who thought of it. We'll never really know, Sasquad. But the idea is it combines two words of Sasquatch and squad. So, you know, obviously Sasquatch is our logo. It's the brand. And the idea with that, you know, it's a universal symbol. Everybody knows Sasquatch, Bigfoot. There's folklore. It's goofy, but fun. And then there's also some folks who really think Sasquatch is real. Maybe like the mountain lions. Nice. Yep. And then you tag on the squad, and that just communicates, you know, what we're trying to do with building community and a safe space for people to come out and enjoy the trail. So we think, you know, the two combined kind of sum up what we're trying to accomplish with Sasquad.
Nice. So what's Sasquad running? What is your business?
Yeah, so we put on trail races around New Jersey and New York. So we've got about one race every month. Like I said before, we like to call them trail parties. But they range, the shortest distance we have is a 5K, about 3 miles. And then our longest distance right now is 100 miles. That's happening September at Wayweyanda State Park. In August, we also have an event. The format is called Backyard Ultra, where it's basically like a last person standing event. So if you're participating in the race, you have to complete 4 miles every hour on the hour. So the top of every hour, everybody starts running 4 miles, and then you have exactly 60 minutes to finish. And then the next mile starts, and the race doesn't end until there's one person. So the longest that our event has gone is 36 hours, where the winner completed 150 miles.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a crazy town. So that's our longest race to date. But yeah, it's pretty wild.
So, my friend Mark, we were hiking, and he told me that you set a record for the Hudson Highlands. Hell no, hellhole, Hondo. How do you say that? Is that Hondo?
Hundo, yes.
Hundo. So Hudson Highlands, hell no, hellhole, Hondo. What is that?
Isn't that a fun name?
That is a very complicated but fun name.
I can tell you the backstory on that. So I was supposed to do Tahoe 200 was originally September of 2021, and it was less than 2 weeks before the race that it was canceled and postponed till June of 2022. There were wildfires out in California that postponed the event. So I was left kind of sitting there with, what am I going to do now? Because I put in, you know, a year's worth of preparation to do that 200 miles. And I thought back to an idea I had a couple years ago with connecting basically all the mountains in the Hudson Highland region. From Bear Mountain was the southernmost point, and then the northernmost point was Mount Beacon and Fishkill Ridge on the other side of the Hudson. So I took out all my trail conference maps, New Jersey Trail Conference map, and drew a line that connected all of the mountains, and it came out to just about 100 miles with, wow. It was about 44,000 feet of elevation change of going up and down every mountain.
Wow.
And going into it, I was calling it the Hudson Valley Traverse, the HVT. And nice. Then I was about it was around 100K, so mile 62. And it was over 24 hours into it. And I was just on another planet in another dimension. And I said, this isn't the Hudson Valley Traverse. Like, this is going to be called the Hudson Highlands, hell no, hell hole, Hundo. That's nice. That's what it went down. So when I finished it, I sent it over to the fastest known time website and said, you know, you can submit routes for other people to do. And me and my friends are like, there's no way they're going to approve this name and publish it. And then sure enough, they put it online. And since then, there's been one person who's completed it. And it was very, very cool to see that happen. It took me 40 hours to finish.
Wow.
And then this local guy, he's up in Connecticut. His name is Justin Kowski. He did it in like 24 hours. Unbelievable. And it was very cool to talk with him afterwards, you know, to hear what he thought about it. And you know, he said it was pretty soul crushing, but that was a pretty unique experience, I would say.
So is that like 40 hours straight is what you did, or was it like what do they call those, like separation days and stuff like that?
No, it was 40 hours straight. So wow. I started at, it was about 4:30 a.m. at the Bear Mountain parking lot. And I did a pretty much a continuous push till midnight that day. I was halfway through. I got to the trailhead for Storm King Mountain. And, you know, I had so many friends who were out there supporting me and helping crew and pace. And that was the one kind of longer break. I think I spent like 30 minutes just laying down on, my friend had like a camping cot. And I said, I'm going to try to
Wow.
sleep. I mean, I couldn't sleep. I didn't sleep at all, but I just laid down and then kept going. But yeah, it took about 40 hours. And that was, I mean, it was soul crushing, but incredible. It was an awesome experience.
Wow. 40 hours straight. That's insane. And
It
at
was
like
so nutty.
six to 8 hours, my knees are killing me. So I don't know how you can do 40 hours of, almost 100 miles and 44,000 feet of elevation gain loss. That's insane.
It was something.
Well, I hope more and more people try it. Maybe that could be a future like run or something like that. That'd be
Me too.
crazy.
I would love to. I mean, it'll never go beyond a fun run, fastest known time, because you have to cross the Newburgh Beacon Bridge. It's a pedestrian bridge, but the 13-mile stretch through Newburgh was sketchy, we'll say. So there's no way it would ever be a sanctioned event.
So like you had to run through the town.
Yeah, we went through
Ooh.
Newburgh, and that was at night. It was like 11, 12 at night. I mean, there were folks stumbling out of bars, screaming at us, and
Wow.
you're running on shoulders that have like 2 inches. And but thankfully I was with friends, so I had like four friends who were running with me. And then I've got a great community. There were two cars that were like following us, so there's one in
Nice.
front, one behind, which actually it was great. It was actually pretty smart safety wise that they were there. But yeah, it would never be a sanctioned event where you could get people to like pay for and sign a waiver to do that.
That's pretty cool. That's wicked. I'll have to definitely look into that. I will tag that actually. It's gonna take a long time to write. Hell no. There we go. I'll also tag your business in there too, Sasquad
Cool. That's awesome.
running. What else goes into that, your business, besides, planning trail parties and stuff like that? Do you guys do anything else?
Yeah, that's the bulk of it. We do have, some other events to build the community. We actually recently did a wilderness first aid certification in conjunction with New Jersey Search and Rescue. That was fantastic. We had a great turnout for that. We did that with NJ Search and Rescue and the New York New Jersey Trail Conference.
Nice.
We'll do like beginner intro to trail clinics type of things at local running stores, where it encourages people just to come out to learn about trail running and hiking. And then we'll plan the location so it's next to local trails, so we can hop over there and get people out on the trails. We work with the Trail Conference to do trail work days. So I'm communicating with them right now to get some trail work done at Northern Green State Forest in northern New Jersey. And yeah, I'm sure there's other things. We
Nice.
do, goofy things. Like we have an eggnog slog, a 1 mile, which
Interesting.
is horrible. I don't participate. I just provide the opportunity for others to participate.
Interesting. All right, so let's get to the bulk of the conversation. So you're looking to set the fastest known time for a female on a long path. Can you what's the statistics on the long path?
Yeah, so the statistics are right now the official end-to-end is 358 miles. Starting, if you're going north to south, it starts at John Thatcher State Park outside of Albany, and then the southern terminus is in Manhattan. So you actually now you cross over the George Washington Bridge to finish in Manhattan. Previously, it was at Fort Lee, which didn't require you to cross the George Washington Bridge, but they've built a really incredible pedestrian walkway now, which is making it a lot safer to go over the GWB. But yeah, the long path, the intention is it for to for it to extend all the way up into the Adirondack Parks. As I understand it now from my conversations with Andy Garrison, he's pretty much the head of the long path. He has explained there is some unofficial blazing that extends up to like the very southern tip of Adirondack Park, but I think it's about 78 additional miles, but it's almost completely road. So the goal is to, continue acquiring land and to move as much of the road sections throughout the whole long path onto the trail. But It's a really, really unique trail. It's got a little bit of everything. I mean, personally, I think the highlight is the 90-mile stretch that goes through the heart of the Catskills. That'll definitely be the most challenging. In those 90 miles, it's over, I think it's over 40,000 feet of elevation change in that section alone. So yeah, I'm going to be going north to south. I've got most of my friends are based around here in North Jersey and Southern New York. So the thought is I'm going to have more support the further south I go. And I think it'd be pretty cool to finish by going over the George Washington Bridge and into Manhattan.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Is that the lowest point on the trail?
Yes. Yep.
Nice. Okay. I was going to say, I'm like, I know about the long path. Of course, I've been on the long path every once in a while hiking the Catskills, but of course I've never done the whole long path. That's just crazy. I don't know if I can do that.
I bet you could.
What is your projected, do you have a projected time that you are going to be doing this?
Yeah, right now I'm eyeing up around a week, 7-8 days or so.
It's only a week away?
Oh, when am I starting? Is that what you're asking? Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then
I thought you were asking how long I was hoping to take. No, my projected start date is July 8th. I believe it's a Saturday.
Nice.
So basically the hottest, most humid possible start date ever with the most bugs and the most humidity and but also the most daylight. So that's the big positive. So
good. And then as you were getting into it, you said about a week is what you're planning.
That would be the A goal, is to do it around a week. But for sure, you know, my goal is to find and test my own limits and see what that looks like. So who knows? Time will tell what actually happens out there.
Exactly. And that's the craziness of it. Who knows? At least there's going to be no snow and ice, hopefully. Oh, if there is, then something's wrong. So what type of planning goes into this amazing accomplishment that you look to achieve?
Yeah. The planning, that's what I love about these long multi-day big projects is all the back end planning. I really enjoy that aspect of it, the logistics and trying to problem solve and predict what problems could come up and having kind of a plan A, B, and C. So right now, the big focus right now is I've got a spreadsheet going. I've got it here on my other screen. And I'm putting together just all the information I can possibly dump into it. And I've got this spreadsheet shared with the ladies who are going to be helping crew and pace. And so I started with all the information that the New York, New Jersey Trail Conference has online. It is unbelievable the amount of information they have on their long path dedicated page. So that's what I've been working with. The tricky part is the Trail Conference has all this information organized going northbound. So starting at the GWB and going up to Albany. So it's been a lot of math involved with what I'm doing on the back end because I have to flip everything. So all the information on mile markers on, you know, I mean, the details are incredible what they've included on, like, there's a deli at mile 7 of section 33. So, but that has to flip for me. So I'm basically, you know, translating all of their information, but reversing it. So it's going from north to south.
Interesting. So have you planned every like overnight camp and everything like that? Of course.
That's what I'm working on right now. I think what we're landing on the plan, I mean, it has to come together, but we're going to try to borrow a camper van from a friend. And because I'm doing, you know, when you're doing an FKT, there's different formats you can do. There's supported, which is what the option that I'm doing. That's what Ken did and Jeff Adams did, where you can have friends come out and they can give you food. They can help you with camping. You can go to a hotel. They can drive you to and from the motel, stuff like that. So the more we've been talking, the more trying to find a camper van sounds like it's going to be a good option, because it really gives you a lot of more flexibility with, like, you're not locked into having to end at you know, mile, whatever, because that's where camping is permitted, or that's where there's a motel that's 3 miles away. You know, like you can instead just crash for the night on, you know, in a dirt parking lot, you know, trailhead thing with the van. So we'll see. We're trying to, you know, make it come together. And I think it'd be a really fun experience with friends to just be able to share that time. And, you know, it should be good. So we'll see. That's part of the planning right now.
Yeah. Good. So you're in the, like the heart of it, you're getting ready to. Excellent. So how many miles per day do you think you're going to be? I mean, of course, that'll be based on elevation gain and loss and stuff like that. What's your goal of miles per day?
Yeah, I think it's going to be definitely unique to each section that we're, you know, that I'm traveling through. You know, for instance, the Catskills is not going to be the same mileage as when we're going through the, you know, Wallkill area where you're running on a rail trail that's flat type of thing, compared to like the Devil's Path in the Catskills. So I mean, I'd like to do big miles the first couple of days leading into the Catskills, like coming out of Albany. I mean, it'd be awesome to do about 50 miles each day. To so the first 2 days are 100 miles, and then I mean, I gotta think the Catskills is gonna take 2.5 days to complete. And then I don't know. I mean, you can put everything on paper, but it's really what happens when the rubber meets the road and you're out there. And I think what I was thinking today, actually, when I was out on a run this afternoon, I need to look at it more as time rather than miles. I mean, miles is definitely in the back of my mind, but I think it's going to be more helpful planning wise and also mentally to think like, okay, I'd like to have the goal of being out there 17, 18 hours each day and just trying to cover as much ground as you can. And then sleeping for a few hours, getting up and starting again.
That's crazy. That's a good way to do it, actually. You know, like if you don't hit your goal of 20 miles in a day, but you do hit your goal of working of doing 17 hours, then That's a more, like you said, more mentality challenge right there. It's just like, well, at least I hit the 17 hours, and you know, the Devil's Path is definitely, you're right, is going to be crazy. And then you also got to go over, is it Wittenberg? Wittenberg and Cornell, and then Table and Peekamose and stuff.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it starts out as soon as you get to Route 28, you're immediately doing the Escarpment Trail. And then, you know, you go to North South Lake, keep going south a bit, and then you're on the Devil's Path.
The Catterskill High Peak one is going to be, I mean, it's going up to Poets Ledge is no joke, because you're at one of the lowest points in the Catskills, going all the way up to like 3,500 feet.
I think I'm the most scared and most excited about the Catskill section. Like, I think it's just going to be absolutely the hardest thing ever, but also incredible. I mean, you know, some of those viewpoints, it's going to be unreal. You know, it's going to be really, really a cool experience.
Yeah. But the whole long path is just magical itself. Like, you know, I've been in different sections of the long path. I don't think I've been on anything south of the Catskills yet. It's just too long of a drive, but you know, was it John Boyd Thatcher State Park?
Yes.
Yeah. That's magical, because it's all a cliff overlooking Albany. And then once you get further away from that, further south, you start getting into the outer skirts of the Catskills, and then the old abandoned trailways and old abandoned logging roads, and then the conservation areas. So it starts to get more, at least, woodsy and stuff like that. And then you go through the Catskills, you're in the middle of absolute nowhere. Then you get down in the Hudsons, you're kind of the Gunks and stuff like that. Yeah. You're kind of on the edge of the Hudson. So it offers everything.
It does. Yeah. I'm also very excited about going through the Gunks. I mean, that area is spectacular, going, you know, through Sam's Point and the waterfall that I can never pronounce the name that starts with a K as well. You know, it's like it's such an odd name.
Kerhonkson?
Yeah.
Is that the Kerhonkson one?
I never know how you say it, but it's absolutely incredible, that waterfall. So I think that'll be neat. The unfortunate thing is there's a long road stretch that once you dump out of the Catskills, it's like 13 or 14 miles of road, which I'm not looking forward to. Maybe it'll be a nice change of pace from coming out of the Catskills, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, and you guys don't have to cross the highway anymore, do you? The Palisades? Didn't you used to have to do that, or is that a whole separate area?
Is that by Harriman? Is that what you're referring to? Yeah, I believe that it still goes across because,
Oh, that's scary.
yeah, I pass that actually every time I drive up to Bear Mountain. You know, it's funny now that I've been playing this. Of course, the long path has always been there, but now that you're aware and you're looking at maps, every time I drive by, like I see the aqua blazes and
Yeah.
it does cross over. So that'll be
Sweet.
interesting.
Crazy. So with the trail running stuff, have you ever had any close calls on the trail?
Ooh, any close calls? I'm sure I have. I definitely had a lot of bear encounters, that's for sure.
Oh,
Since I've moved
nice.
up
That's
here.
not normal.
Yeah, since I've moved up here to Sussex County, I had never seen a bear ever up until this last year when I moved up here in April. And in the spring and summer, I see one almost every run. So at least once a week, I'm
Wow.
seeing bears at Wayweyanda. I mean, they are so prevalent here, they terrorize my trash can. Actually, it's a losing battle with the trash cans.
So
Which,
they're the domesticated type of bears.
yes, oh yeah. They're the type of bears where, you know, you start shouting and they're gonna run off, which is a good thing. But yeah, it's very densely populated. They just brought back the bear hunt this year. It had been suspended the last couple of years up here in Jersey. So it'll be interesting to see how that affects the population this next, you know, they're starting to come out. I just saw some tracks actually on my last run earlier this week. So they're coming around again.
Wow. So no close calls with the like trail running, like almost twisted ankle, or you could have like caught yourself and almost like fell or something like that.
I don't know about injury wise. I had let me think. I was working at a summer camp. This is years ago when I was in college, and we did trips out to the Adirondacks, to the high peaks. And I remember when we were doing a training, it was like the preseason before the kids got there. I had gone out with my co-counselor, and we had a close call just with we made rookie mistakes. You know, we didn't have all the proper sleep gear, and then we had tried to stay in a lean-to, but there was like this sketchy dude that was there. He was like sharpening a knife, and we were like, we're not gonna stay here. You know, we were two college ladies, and
Oh, yeah.
we ended up. I got this was so long ago. I got to think about where we were. We were out past. I feel like we had hiked Colden. We had gone out to Colden and we were supposed to stay somewhere out there. I can't even remember all the details, but we had ended up doing it was like, I don't know, we were on our feet for 15 or 18 hours because we had hiked
Wow.
all the way out ready to camp down for the night, and then all those things happened. So we came back all the way back to the LOJ, and it was a long day, but that was probably one of the few times where I felt kind of creeped out on trail. And yeah, it was so long ago. Who knows if it was just some, you know, mountain man who was fiddling with his pocket knife and we were just scared,
Yeah, he was bored or something.
or if it was a creep, I don't know. It was a long time ago, but that's probably, I know that's not really that great of a story. You're probably looking
No.
for like a bone sticking out of my knee or something,
Yeah, well,
but
I'm curious. I'm like most of the people that I've interviewed haven't had like a close call. Like most close calls have been like near hypothermia and stuff, which is
okay.
insane. I do never want to deal with that because that's very scary stuff. Like a broken bone, you could be saved, but hypothermia, you might have that. You lose your sense of mind and stuff like that, and you can wander off trail. And then with a broken bone, you can sit on trail till somebody catches you, and you can maybe get out. But it's just like most of the people don't have like close calls,
I guess that's probably a good thing,
Very good.
right?
I've only had one close call, and I was bushwhacking up Cheryl. And I stepped wrong in between like two rocks, and my like foot fell into the hole.
Oh.
And when it did, it caught, and I tried to catch my hiking pole and it didn't. So I went face forward and I hit my head on a rock.
Oh.
And like, I must've been knocked out for like maybe like 5-10 seconds. And I got up and I'm just like, oh shit. And then immediately it kicks in, like my SAR instincts kick in, and I dump my bag out and look for, like, I see a little bit of blood, but you know, you're kind of panicking. So you're like, yeah, it's bleeding profusely. And I throw a gauze pad on there and like, it's nothing. I'm just like, oh, all right. So, but other than that, I still summited at least. You always got to summit after you get injured, right?
Of course. Yeah.
You got to finish the hike. You got to finish the summit. You got to summit. But that was, it's nothing like I'm waiting for somebody to say, you know, they had a broken leg or something like that, and they had to get rescued, or like somebody else, you know, they have had to rescue. I know a bunch of my friends who've had to rescue other people, but they've never had a close call. So it's really weird. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Yeah, thankfully, fingers crossed, no major injuries. I had a close encounter with a bear last summer that was, I felt scared with the black. It was just one that wasn't responding to me shouting and, you know, screaming, "Hey bear, hey bear." And it was following me. And, you know, it feels like it was an eternity, but it was probably only, you know, 10, 15 seconds of me shouting. And he was big. It was a big guy. And finally, once I like really waved my hands in the air over my head, then he turned to run. But that was unsettling, I'd have to say, you know, to have a big black bear. It was walking parallel with me off trail. So something I don't want to experience again.
Not at all.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've done a fair bit of traveling. I was out in Montana in September and we were required to carry bear spray for grizzlies and we didn't see anything. And then, you know, I see black bears all the time here. So it's interesting.
Yeah. We were up in Northern or up in the Canadian Rockies, and we had to get our lesson on bear spray because I'm just like I don't know how to use this, number one, and I want to know how to use it. And so two teenage kid taught us, and they were freaking hilarious when they did it. And they're just like, I forgot, it was something about like you know the thing they do in Mortal Kombat or something. I'm just like, yeah. He's like, that's what you do, you just do the Mortal Kombat thing. I'm just like, you guys are crazy. But we had up in, you're talking about Montana and grizzly bears, we had a close encounter with a grizzly bear up in Canada.
Really? I'm sure that was frightening.
Yeah, we were coming down this one trail, and it was, I think it was like a 9,000 foot mountain, and like my wife has got her like head down and just, you know, doing that pace, and then all of a sudden I see like off to the side on the slope was a grizzly bear, and
wow.
I just like grab her pack and I'm just like, get back here. And like, she's like, what's your problem? And I tell her, I'm like, grizzly bear. She sees it and she starts sprinting like the other way. She starts panicking.
Oh boy. And, it's not good.
Yeah. But when she started to go, I like took two pictures and then I like kind of scuffed my foot.
Okay.
And it like looked up and it lost its footing and it fell down the mountain. It was like it was like 10 feet. And I was just like, oh no. I felt bad. But then I was like, at the same time, I'm like, that thing could easily kill me in seconds.
Yeah. So yeah. It's frightening to see them up close. I've never seen a grizzly, but I mean, even black bears, you know, they're generally harmless. They're still very large creatures.
Yeah. 400 pounds is not small.
Yeah.
So where can we see, well, let's talk about volunteering. So you do a lot of volunteering. It's very important. So where do you volunteer?
Yeah, I try to volunteer as much as possible. You know, I'm in the race scene. So more of my volunteering is volunteering at events, but I still do work with the New York, New Jersey Trail Conference. And then not so much now because I moved, but I was working a lot with the South Mountain Reservation Conservancy that was in a little bit South Jersey outside the city. But yeah, I mean, volunteering, man, it's interesting with race directing, and we've partnered with the Trail Conference. So we work with them. We do a lot of fundraising for the Trail Conference. It's amazing how many people don't know that they exist, because that's so common, is that our races, when we'll talk before the race about, you know, we're supporting the Trail Conference with this event. We're going to be donating funds to them with some of the proceeds. And a lot of people don't even know. And I think there's just this unawareness that there are organizations that make the trails, that maintain the trails. And when a tree falls down, I don't know if it's just, you know, people don't think about it and they just see like, oh, the trail, you know, the tree has been removed and that's nice. But once, what's very cool is like once runners, at least in my community, they find out, it's very enthusiastic of wanting to support and get involved. So that's been cool to see. Just, I think it's just an awareness thing of letting people know that there are these opportunities to get involved. Because anytime we've organized a volunteering event where we're doing trail cleanup with picking up trash or helping with trail work crews, there's always a ton of people who want to come out and get involved.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, you're out there every week, you know, you do like 5-6 hours every week. That totals up to 52 weeks times five is a good, like what, 500 hours out there. How about you put 8 hours every 3 months of your life to volunteer for some part of the trail or some organization or whatever. And you can help vastly in anywhere, really. It doesn't have to be the Catskills. You can help out anywhere, your local area, stuff like that.
Yeah. And it goes a long way, because when you see some of the work that these trail crews do in a day, it's unbelievable. I mean, falling boulders up mountains to create, you know, stairs or water runoffs and stuff like that. It's really incredible to see what volunteers can do over the course of a day.
Yeah. Like you said, the tree removal, a lot of people think that the rangers do it. The rangers do it sometimes, but most of the time it's reported to a trail, like your trail maintenance chair. And then they, you know, get somebody to get out there as soon as possible to do it. And it might not happen in a day, or it might happen in a week, but it happens, and it does mostly by a volunteer. So it's pretty wicked stuff. You're right.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, especially those chainsaw gangs that go out, you know, they got to carry the chainsaws.
Yep.
It's pretty on their wild. Backs. Yeah.
So also, I know that you are doing this also to raise money for the trail conference, correct?
Yes.
So how can we donate?
Yeah. So the trail conference set up a website. It's pretty simple. It's New York, New Jersey Trail Conference. So the initials for that, nynjtc.org/support-KIM, KIM. And that's the fundraising landing page where you can designate, you know, whatever amount that you want to go to the trail conference. To me, that was really, really important to use this project and the platform to raise funds and awareness for the trail conference, because, I mean, not only are they an incredible organization, they also maintain all 358 miles of the long path. So it makes sense to do that, to give back to the trail conference. And I'm also raising funds for the nonprofit Bigger Than the Trail. It's an organization that they use the funds that are raised to provide cost-free therapy for anybody who needs it. So anyone who needs who needs a hand with mental health, whatever that is, depression, anxiety, whatever, Bigger Than the Trail is providing 3 months, no cost, with a licensed therapist. So I was able to get help with them last year, and I'm just working hard to get the word out. Because again, that's another organization where I think people just don't know that things like that exist. And, you know, for me, I was using every excuse possible to avoid getting help. And then Bigger Than the Trail just made that really easy, where, you know, you fill out a form online and then you're instantly connected with
nice.
A therapist. So
awesome. That's great. I never knew about that. So I can't wait to plug that in on the show notes.
Yeah.
And I'll plug it in on any of my social platforms too.
Awesome. Cool. Awesome.
Also, where can we see updates? Are you on YouTube and Instagram and stuff?
Yeah. The YouTube channel, if you just search first and last name, Kim Levinsky, it should pop up. Same thing with Instagram and Facebook, just listed as Kim Levinsky. There's no trail name or anything. So that'll pop up there. And I'm trying to post some updates every couple weeks or so on the long path.
Awesome. I will plug those in as well. Also, one last question. Where's your favorite hike in the Catskills so far?
Oh, my favorite hike so far. Last year I did the, I guess it was the western half of the Devil's Path. So I had started at Devil's Tombstone and I did an out and back on the western side. And that was really cool. It was very difficult. It was really cool. But the view, I mean, the view, Cornell Wittenberg is really hard to beat. I know you asked for one, but I mean, Giant's Ledge.
No, no.
You can't go wrong with that. I was up there this fall at Peak Foliage and was able to beat the, you know, the gobs of people that went up there. I got up there early and that was really, really breathtaking up there at Giant's Ledge.
Yeah. I've been up there. I'm pretty sure every season I've been up there for foliage, Peak Foliage. And I have one photo that I can't believe I took, and that it's stunning. So
yeah,
good places. And the Western, I don't think I've ever heard of anybody doing an out and back starting at the Devil's Tombstone. That's pretty crazy. So did you go all the way over to the parking lot at Spruson and then come back?
I did. Yeah. It was like a peak weekend for training for Tahoe. And actually my plan was to do the first day that out and back. And then I was camping at Devil's Tombstone. And then the second day I was going to do the eastern side out and back. So it was a big mileage weekend.
Wow.
Just, it was bad luck with weather. It was one of those like severe thunderstorms with flooding and everything. So I was getting texts from friends who were saying like, abort, you need to leave, type of a thing. So that was a bummer. But the Western Traverse out and back was hard, but it was really neat. And it's hard not to think about it because I did it in July and it was so hot and humid.
Oh, God.
Just thinking about the summer getting back out there in July, but it'll be fine.
You'll have somebody running with you with one of those spray bottles that has a fan on there, or just a spray bottle or something.
Yeah.
Get a mist. Have someone carry one of those misters that you pump and then just.
Oh, yeah. That's like the peak of high maintenance and drama right there.
Awesome. One last hike. Also, my friend Mary Teacher suggested this post-hike brews and bites. Any suggestion of where you go to after you eat or after you hike, where to go to eat and have something to drink or something?
Oh, man, I haven't done too much of that. I think, is it a cop out to say the Phoenician Diner? I mean, that's.
No, not at all.
I remember getting a pretty good burger there. But yeah, I'm anxious to get up. I'm going up there in May with my two friends who are going to be doing the 90 miles with me in July. So we're doing some recon in May. So we'll have to explore. What's your favorite place? Do you have a favorite stop? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot, but.
So I live up in Oneonta. So I always come like west to south basically and stuff. I got to travel along 23 and 28. Arkville has Oakley's Bar and Grill is fantastic.
Okay.
Always never been disappointed there. Of course, you know, I can't say that after a hike, you're disappointed with any food whatsoever. But that has been great. And Pine Hill is Tito Bandidos.
Okay.
Awesome Mexican restaurant. Once again, is the western part of Catskills. So not a lot of people go there because they stop at like Rider Hollow and stuff or Balsam. And then they go back east and go east and stuff. So
okay.
I get to those. And then if we're going to go over, I don't know about Hunter. Hunter has a bunch of different places that I like, Hunter and Tannersville. So
okay.
I got to explore. But yeah, if you're over in the western part by Arkville, Oakley's is fantastic. Massive burger and stuff.
All right. Right on. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that kind of. I'll be like Jim Carrey in the thing and the cable guy. That concludes our broadcast day. thank you for joining me, Kim. Good luck. I'm going to see when July 8th is and your projected path. And maybe I'm not going to run with you on the trail, but I'll at least say hi to you and like give you a Snickers bar or something on the trail.
I would love that. That would be so fun to see you and to meet you in person. That'd be really great.
It'll be a big like, hey, take it easy. Bye. So that'll be fine. It'll be cool. But yeah, I'll keep up your progress. I'll plug everything you can in. And if we don't meet again, if I don't know if we will, but I'll keep you cheering you on.
Thank you. Good luck
on setting the record.
Thank you so much. This was awesome. I really enjoyed our chat tonight. Thanks for having me.
Well, good. Have a good night. And once again, good luck.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye.
Hey guys, I just want to thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe and throw down a smooth review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any podcast platform that you use. You can also check daily updates of the podcast, hikes, hiking memes, and local news on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and the official website of the show. Remember this, you just keep on living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Wicked, 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 wicked.